Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050. All right, we got Steve Simmons in here from the Toronto Sun, also from TSN Radio. That's how I brought you in yesterday when you joined us. Because you've been doing a lot of radio this summer, and you were hosting the past couple of days.
Sad, isn't it?
What solo happens, hosting.
Sad what happens in the summer.
Solo hosting.
You know the last time I solo hosted? I think it's about 20 years. I have done Overdrive. I'm not sure if I've done Overdrive in a hosting situation, but the previous incarnation of this show was whatever Naylor show was in the afternoon. I had hosted that a bunch of times, and I had hosted the 12 o'clock show a bunch of times, and I think I even hosted the morning, but always with somebody beside me. So you can have a conversation like we're having now.
They're very different doing
when
it on
you
your own.
When you get there by yourself, it's like, who am I talking to now?
Yeah, you know, it's strange because when I started in radio, my first show was a solo show. And when I first got here to TSN Radio, I was on my own. And I was on my own for a number of years, like the majority of the time. Pretty quickly, I guess within like 6 to 8 months, Noodles came aboard and was doing like an hour with me. So the first couple of years, he was on for like an hour at the lunch hour, and then O jumped on board, and then it was the three of us, and now we're here, and now I'm always with somebody else. But for the majority of my career, since I've actually been on the mic and hosting shows, I've done solo shows. Yet the past 2+ years since we moved to 4 p.m., I always have somebody with me, and I haven't hosted solo since. And I don't think I'd be very comfortable going backwards, yet in the past, that's when that was my comfort zone.
I can sit down in front of a keyboard and I can write I've been trained to write 800 words. It's like I've been doing it for 30 some years. I know how to do it. I know how long to write. So you're on the air and you've got a 15 minute segment. And I'm thinking to myself, how many words did you just say in 15 minutes? I think 800 is what? Maybe 3 minutes?
Yeah, you'd fly past that.
Yeah.
We probably collectively have already hit 200 or 300 words.
So if I get to, you know, I get to 800, I'm looking at the clock and I got 11 more minutes and I'm thinking, what do I say now?
Oh, man, that clock is staring at you pretty quickly, isn't it?
You better have notes and things, you know, the next topic you're going to address. Or
yeah, you got
to
be prepared.
Yeah, I was prepared. It's just when you haven't done it in so long, I mean, it's not riding a bike. You don't just get back on and ride.
Yeah, I don't know how I would react. Like, if you didn't show up for whatever reason, you called in, you said, I'm not going to make it, and I was solo for the next 3 hours, I don't think it would be like a Garth Algar moment in Wayne's World when Wayne storms off the set and he just panics and freezes. I don't think I would do that. I think I'd have the capability of getting through it. But I do know it would feel different. It's very different radio. Solo radio compared to two people, compared to three people, is very different.
In the early years of sports radio in this market, scheduling was a problem. So I was doing 10 to noon with, at one time, Mary Ormsby and later with Jim Taddy. And what would happen is at 5 to 12, inevitably someday, some programmer would come in and say, oh, so-and-so's not here for their show at noon. And they'd look at you, and now you've just finished 10 to 12, and now you're doing 12 to 2 or 12 to 3, and you don't have a lineup, and you don't have a schedule. It's like, okay, I'm on for the next 3 hours.
So why was that? Because just bailed, or someone forgot to put somebody else into the schedule?
They were not very organized.
I see.
It was we were learning how to do it at the time, I think. And the schedule was changing. You know, the morning show didn't last long, and the afternoon show didn't last long, and people got moved around, and then...
Well, that's radio and newspapers, man. Yeah. That's the industry. Everything's constantly moving and everything's changing, and the amount of turnover and people are moving from one spot to the next. But you're here, I'm here. It's going to be a two-man ride until 7 p.m. And we were talking about this before the show, that there isn't anything major happening in the sports world. That side of the PGA Championship is ongoing, and we're going to talk about Tiger, who kind of survived. He found a way to grind out an even par morning in the first round of the PGA Championship, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. You've got the NFL preseason that unofficially kicks off tonight. It really started last week with the Hall of Fame game, but I think there's like 12 games going tonight, including a Bills game. Bills are at home against Carolina, and I'm looking forward to that because I'm going to Buffalo tomorrow. I'm going to be off tomorrow, which means in Buffalo it's going to be all about overreacting to one preseason game, which I love. Because it happens with every sport, but more so in football than any other one, because there just isn't enough material to comb over and to be passionate about, because they don't play enough.
Well, the one thing that Toronto misses, And I'm sad that we don't have that, is the way people react to football. And in the United States, and in some places in Canada, the entire week is about the game coming up. And then they play the game, and the entire next week is about the game that was just played and what did or didn't happen. And in places like Buffalo or in Washington or in Dallas, or you can almost go through almost any NFL city, that's the weekly routine. And it, you know, it's unlike any other sport because you're only playing once a week, and there's so many elements to it, and there's so many factors involved in it. And it becomes, honestly, there are cities, the mood of the town shifts based on how the football team did that week.
Well, and Buffalo is a perfect example of that, because Vladdy Guerrero Jr., I'm sure, has caused a bit of a buzz, and he went deep last night. His numbers are off the charts again in AAA, and we'll talk about him and the noise he's making in AAA and what kind of reasonable expectation should be placed upon him once he finally gets to the majors. But in Buffalo, that's all. It's all Bills all the time. Like the Sabres, they've got a following. It is a great hockey town in Buffalo. I'm not selling them short. They do really well considering how awful that team has been for a long time. But with the Bills, because they haven't played in like 7 months, and because they moved up the board to take a quarterback in Josh Allen, who I am assuming will play tonight. I haven't read that he is not in the game. I guess we can try to find that out. But let's say he takes 12 snaps. They will talk about those 12 snaps. Even if he pass, if he could hand off 10 of those and then throw two picks, and they will talk about that 24/7 for the next week until he gets out there again for another preseason game.
First time I was ever in Washington was for a playoff football game. And you get there on like a Thursday night, and there is like the quarterback club show on television where it's a local sports guy with the Redskins quarterback and another panel guy, and that's the half an hour TV show. And the next night they have another one of these shows with a different Redskin. And you turn the radio on in the morning, and you know it's the Jack Pardee show, or whoever, Joe Gibbs, or whoever the coach was at the time. And it seemed every single thing going on surrounded that one football game coming up. And that's all anybody talked about, and that's all anybody surmised about. And the rest of sport, much as it was going on, there were other things going on, it trumped everything else.
Everything else is irrelevant.
And it's something we don't feel in this city, because football doesn't really exist the same way.
Do you think we would if we got an NFL team?
Yes.
See, I don't know if we would immediately, because there wouldn't be that history. Like you mentioned going down to Washington, there's no Joe Gibbs. You know, you can't walk in with a Joe Gibbs type history. You can't walk in with a guy like Theismann, or, you know, a guy who played offensive line for them in the 60s and was an all-pro, and everyone knows who he is, and he's got that kind of name value. It would take some time, I think, to get into a tradition like that.
I think it would take time for the minute they have players. And once they have players, it becomes like, we can talk in July and August about who the 12th forward on the Maple Leafs is. And you can have a logical conversation about it. You can talk about who's going to be on the first power play. Is Tavares going to be there, or is Matthews going to be there? And you can talk about that any day of the year, because people care and people are that passionate. It's the difference in football is there are so few games, and there are so many decisions, and there are so many moving parts. It's a sport that's been made. I mean, ESPN now talks NFL football 12 months of the year. I mean,
the truth. Like, people talk about the NBA and how it's becoming an off-season type of sport as well because of all the player movement and all the drama and really how predictable the regular season has become. But it still has nothing on the NFL. Like, I saw a stat today, and I'm not sure what I'm supposed to read into this. I think it was Darren Rovell that pointed this out, that the NBA's Instagram account has hit 30 million followers, which is a very substantial number. And in comparison, the NFL is somewhere around 11 million. The NHL is at like 3 million. So the NBA has done a great job of utilizing Instagram, and that is the platform that the majority of younger kids are using to connect to the world and connect to the sports world. So it probably says something about the youth and their connection to the NBA. But I'm not going to pretend as if that means that the NFL is in danger of being caught, because it's just not a reality. Like, we talk all the time about kneeling and Trump and, this, that, and the other. And then you look at the TV ratings at the end of the year, and it's exclusively NFL across the board. Exclusively.
There's a myriad of problems in the National Football League right now, from, as you say, the kneeling thing, from the concussion story. I mean, you can go through it. There are so many issues that should be damaging the sport in every conceivable way. I believe, if I have this statistic correct, 7 of the 10 most watched television shows in America last year. I'm not talking sporting. Television shows in America, or NFL football
games. Absolutely it would be. Absolutely. And the other three would be like the Oscars and the Grammys and the Emmys. You know, maybe. Like, it's not Big Bang Theory or anything. Like,
well, usually there's one of those kind of shows that's around 11.
Maybe.
But the very fact, you don't see an NBA game there.
No, you don't.
And yet, hockey's not even in the equation.
Of course not, but neither is baseball.
Neither is baseball.
Maybe the World Series Game 7 if it's like the Yankees playing somebody. But you need a miracle matchup for that kind of potential in terms of ratings.
What the NFL has figured out, and I don't know if there's even a comparable for it. People care locally desperately about their teams. And people care nationally. In baseball, people care locally. Local baseball ratings tend to be very good in their markets. The national games, whether it's the weekend on Saturdays or the All-Star game or the Home Run Derby, they don't do well in those. They don't necessarily do well with baseball playoffs.
Very regional.
But it's very regional. The NBA, for the most part, is very regional, even though people are flipping out about Christmas Day and all those other things. But football is both. And it's the only sport that's found a way to do both. And that's one of the reasons we can scream and yell about Roger Goodell. It's why he's making the $40 million a year he's making, because they're making more money than they've ever made before.
It's steeped in the culture. It's steeped in the sports culture of America. Like, it always has been in my lifetime, and I expect that it will be throughout the rest of my life. What's going to happen in 100 years, I have no idea. Because 100 years ago, that was baseball. Like, the NFL didn't exist 100 years ago. So I don't know what it's going to be 100 years down the road, but for the next 20, 30, 40, I expect, because of these routines that we've talked about, and the tribalism that comes with it, and the connection that not individuals have, but families have, and friends have, and how dedicated they are. And then on top of that, you have gambling and fantasy, which is miles ahead of every other sport. Like, that's another reason why I look at Instagram followers, and I'm like, awesome. How many of them are in fantasy leagues in the NBA compared to the NFL? I guarantee you it's not even close.
Well, the other fantasy games, much as you might be interested in them, don't compare. They don't consume you the same way. I mean, I've been in rotisserie baseball leagues, and those things take up all of your time if you want to do it.
I can't do those.
Because
I can't do baseball.
They're too consuming.
They're way too consuming.
The once a week, I better watch to see what Melvin Gordon does this Sunday kind of thing. That becomes, and I'm playing the guy in the office who sits at the next desk.
Right, and that it's four months a year.
It becomes conversation with your friends if they're your friends, conversation with your coworkers. I'm in Pierre LeBrun's football pool. It's all media guys, primarily. It's guys who work in the industry.
Gives you something to chirp about.
Every time
I
see Pierre or someone, you know, there's a line to give back and forth.
Well, you just said about the Christmas Day games in the NBA and how people are complaining about them, and I'm one of those people that are complaining about it. I'd like to see the Raptors play. Why would you not want to see the Raptors play on Christmas Day? Like, I find some of the arrogant, flippant, oh, stop complaining about it takes, or not taking into consideration that it's not about respect in the States. It's about, I just like to see them play when everyone has the day off. That would be fun. But the reason the NBA has located that date as an important date is because that coincides with the end of the NFL season. That's why, that speaks to the significance of the NFL, the brand, the shield, the importance, the popularity, that the NBA, with their 30 million Instagram followers, are like, oh yeah, the first 2.5 months of our season are completely irrelevant. Nobody cares.
Well, the NHL's kind of, in the United States, taken the same approach. They have, the NBA kicks off on Christmas, and that's that, welcome to our league, here's LeBron, here are the great teams, you're going to see everybody this week. And it's so obvious why Toronto's not there. They don't draw any fans. American television. You're not going to put somebody on there that no one's going to watch. And so, you know, you're going to have half an audience instead of a full audience. And the NHL does it about a week later. They have their outdoor game on NBC, which is for them a pretty nice kickoff, because there's not a lot of, we got to sit down and watch that Sunday afternoon game or Saturday afternoon in the NHL in October. There's no audience for that.
Not in the United States.
No. And so, but they've developed kind of an audience, more so than I think they've ever had before, for that weekly game and that NBC Sports Network games, and they've done such a nice job of doing the games that I think it's made it better as well. But they start with that the outdoor spectacular, and NBC does that pretty large on New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they get decent numbers.
While bowl games are going on.
Yep. Yeah, although that's kind of changing because of the playoffs. They're now in prime time. They're at night. And the bowl schedule is very difficult to follow anymore because it's largely become irrelevant outside of the four teams that are in the playoff. But you're right. I mean, the NHL trying to chase those leagues, there's no point in even getting into the conversation because it's not going to happen.
Well,
going to happen.
They have to do what they do within the context of where their game sits in the mainstream.
They got to find their spots.
I think they have found their spot as well as they're ever going to find it.
Probably.
That's their spot.
Yeah.
Unless they go back on ESPN, and that will help them a little bit. But not a lot. I think where they are right now is a pretty good place to be.
The PGA Championship is off and running. Ricky Fowler had himself a great day today. Tiger Woods started off horribly. He was 3 over quick, and he battled back to even par for the day. We'll get into that in about 15 minutes. And Kawhi Leonard, he hasn't spoken. Someone has posted a statement, and it is the most Kawhi Leonard statement of all time. We'll tell you about that next. First round of the PGA Championship ongoing down in St. Louis. We'll catch up with Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel in about 10 minutes. Rogers Cup continuing. Milos Raonic is out. Dennis Shapovalov playing pretty well. Won last night, causing a scene up at the Rogers Cup. I like it.
And Djokovic is in trouble, I think, today. I don't know what the score is now, but he was in some difficulty.
He lost the first set.
And came back and won the second and was down in the third. So I don't know where that ended up.
It's on right now. We'll track it. So, but yeah, I like Shapovalov's a kid. Like, he's a kid, and you can tell he plays with exuberance, and he's fired up, and he was down last night, and he battled back, and Fognini, I don't even know who he is. I've never heard of him. I'm not a big tennis guy. Was not happy about Shapovalov's antics on the court. And I don't necessarily blame him because you're out there playing and the kid's going crazy and he's trying to get the crowd behind him. And, of course, he's got a home court advantage because he's from Toronto. But I feel like this kid is a lot easier to gravitate to and get behind than, like, Milos Raonic, who everyone likes Milos, but there's not much to Milos Raonic. He just goes out there and hammers serves, and there's not much personality. He doesn't play with a bunch of personality, and Shapovalov is very, very different.
I find myself now cheering for Milos because of all the setbacks. He's had so many injuries, and he's had so many body breakdowns, and it's never been one part. It's always something different. And every time he seems to get to a level, he then has this, you know, his leg cramp, or his knee goes, or his shoulder does something, or his elbow does something, and it's always... So I'm like you. He's hard to attract to because there's a serve, and the rest of the game is...
And the expectations have finally faded away, right? Like, for a number of years there, it was like he's making his way up, and I think he got as high as, like, sixth or seventh in the world, and Wimbledon final, I believe, and there was reasons to believe he could break through. If Federer, Djokovic, Nadal, Murray finally took a step back or lost somehow, it could open up for him, and he just never took advantage of that. And now I think people are hoping that it'll be Denis Shapovalov who can actually finally win an elusive slam for a Canadian.
Well, he still has a while to go to get to where Milos has already been. Like, to stay in the top 10 is a very hard thing to do in the tennis world. And Milos was able to do that when healthy for almost basically from 2013 to 2017. So he was around in and around the top 10 for all of those years. Shapovalov is now in the 20s, and he's moving, but he hasn't made that move yet, and he needs, you know, he hasn't had a very good year. He had a poor, you know, he's been in 3 Grand Slams so far, and he hasn't had, you know, a good performance in any of the 3. So maybe now playing here, going into the U.S. Open, will be the thing. And I don't know if you saw last night, there's a kid named Felix Auger, I'm going to attempt the last one, Aliassime.
I think you got it.
He's an athlete.
And he is.
And he's
18,
guy.
I believe.
He
right?
should have won last night. And he kind of just, he was, unfortunately, it was his birthday too. And he kind of just 18'd on us.
Mm-hmm.
He should have won the match last night. He's a guy that's going to be around. And he's a guy. And so you've got 2 athletes and 2 kind of fun guys to watch.
Under the age of 20.
And it's going to be fun to see over a period of time because Federer's disappearing soon. And Nadal's disappearing soon. And all these guys who have dominated this sport for so very long. Really, 4 guys have won every major tournament that mattered, with the odd exception, over the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, within the next 5, you're going to have these 2 Canadians battling it out with a whole bunch of other guys to see where they are. And the one thing about tennis, you never know the names beyond, say, the top 10. But the guy who's 25 and the guy who's 100, there's not much difference between them. They're almost all the same guy, except who wins the big points in any given match. And so in the year where the 100th ranked guy moves up to 30, he had a better year. There's not, so losing or beating any of those guys, it's all the same. They're all the same.
They're
player.
All very interchangeable, and that's but,
and they're all good.
How, of course they are. They're on tour. I mean, it's just like golf. I mean, golf's the same way. The top 10 guys, you know who they are. You know what they're capable of doing. But the guy who's 85th is an incredible golfer. Is better than any other pro you're ever going to come across in your life. Anyway, we'll get to golf and tennis later in the afternoon. So Kawhi Leonard, I don't believe for a second he actually posted this statement. And I am taking umbrage with the idea that Kawhi Leonard has finally made some remarks. These are not remarks. It's a statement that I believe somebody else wrote for him. And they're very hollow. I can't imagine people in San Antonio are thinking this was heartfelt. He wrote to San Antonio that he's been going back and forth for the last few weeks about what he should say, and all he wants to say is thank you. He says thank you to his teammates, thank you to Popovich, thank you to the city, blah, 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 blah. At no point does he mention the Raptors or Toronto, so the jury is still out on how he feels about the trade. Nobody knows how he feels about being in Toronto, what he thinks is going to happen with the Raptors, how he feels about their expectations. Everyone else in the East is talking about what the Celtics are going to do and the Sixers are going to do and the Pacers are going to do. No one knows about the Raps because their superstar player hasn't even said their name publicly. But this is what I think we can expect out of Kawhi Leonard, that it's going to be very limited access to him because he's not a talker. He's not going to be interested in saying much. And whoever does speak on his behalf, it's going to be this kind of stuff. It'll be calculated, it'll be edited, and it'll be online.
We're going to spend about the next 11 months playing the game, what is Kawhi thinking? Because we know this much, he's not going to be saying anything. So it's, what is he really thinking? Is he planning on staying? Does he like being here? Does he want to be here? And all the things attached to it. What I found fascinating upon his trading, when he was traded to Toronto, was not a single teammate, not a single guy he spent any of the time with in San Antonio had one of those tweets, thanks Kawhi, see you Kawhi, good luck Kawhi, anything like that. There was all kinds of guys around the NBA who were outraged that DeMar DeRozan was traded. Players on other teams, you know, they were expressing themselves, you know, who's going to trust Toronto now, and all that other stuff that went along with it. And his own teammates were, you know, and I suspect they were instructed not to, you know, go to nth degrees, because as we know, Kyle Lowry's been relatively silent on the subject ever since. But to me, it's fascinating that none of the guys that he played with have said anything about this guy at all. He was a finals MVP on a championship
right.
team.
Well, even guys who he used to play with, like Tim Duncan never says anything, but can someone get Tim Duncan on the line? Can someone get Matt Bonner on the line, who will speak? We all know Matt. We all like Matt. He's been on this show many, many times. And we had Brian Scalabrine on a couple of weeks ago. You might have been on with us.
I was.
And he was saying that he and Bonner are close, and they were working out one day in a gym, and Kawhi Leonard was putting up shots, and Scalabrine was like, watch this, I'm going to try to chirp at him just to see if I can get a reaction. And he was chirping at Kawhi, and Kawhi didn't even react. He's like, I've never heard this guy say a word. I've never heard him intimate anything. He's never shown any emotion. Yet with all of that being said, I am quite curious to find out what is going to garner more coverage collectively this upcoming season. Will it be Kawhi Leonard and everything that he is and everything that he represents, or the field with the Raptors? Because I'm leaning towards Kawhi, and this is a guy who may never give a quote. He may never say anything. He may never show any emotion. He may never give any indication of what he wants, what he likes, what he needs. Yet I would guess, in all the papers, the talk radio stations, the TV networks, about 55% of the coverage will be exclusively Kawhi, and 45% will be the rest of the field.
And I think your numbers are probably pretty close to accurate.
Think about that.
If you're sitting now in Masai Ujiri's office, or in Bobby Webster's office, or Nick Nurse's office, or even more so in the media relations office of this basketball team, and you're thinking, okay, we traded for this guy in mid-July. It's now coming up to mid-August. We don't know when he's going to talk, if he's going to talk. We're not going to try and force him to talk because we don't want to do anything to upset him in any way. It is the rarest situation, frankly, I have ever been. I've been around a lot of teams and a lot of years and a lot of places. I've never seen anything like, or not even a statement. Like, what I might have done if I was one of their media relations people, I would have picked the most Raptors-friendly broadcaster they know, whoever that happens to be, and have them sit down, fly him to wherever Kawhi lives, have them sit down with Kawhi, and do a 5-minute one-on-one.
Yeah, and post it on the website.
And set it up. Post it on the website, get it out to the television networks, and work it that way. They can't even do that, it seems.
No, this is the precarious position they're in. They made this deal not for 1 year. They're willing to accept that it could be 1 year, but they want Kawhi Leonard here long-term. This is a grand slam if he signs long-term. So they are going to do whatever they can to make him feel comfortable. Yet at the same time, they may be selling their soul a little bit because other guys have to speak. This is the biggest trade in the history of the franchise because you're acquiring the superstar, unlike Vince leaving, and he won't talk. He hasn't said anything. No press conference, no interview, nothing. There's nothing featuring Kawhi Leonard.
And we're going to have this conversation tomorrow and the day after.
Right.
And in October and in December, and we'll carry it on.
Can you
there.
Imagine how amazing it was if the guy was just loaded with personality and was popping off from the hip and just saying everything that was on his mind?
And then he writes a book 10 years from now.
He might. Todd Lewis from the Golf Channel on day one of the PGA Championship in 2 minutes. All right, Gord Ash will be in studio in the 5 p.m. hour. A.J. Hawk will join us as well, Super Bowl champ, longtime NFL middle linebacker from the Ohio State Buckeyes. Might have to ask him about that. What's up with his Buckeyes?
Coach, Urban Meyer.
Well, something's going on there. I mean, nothing's been announced, but the season's right around the corner, and that's a big story in the Midwest. Another big one in the Midwest would be what's going on with the PGA Championship and Ricky Fowler, who is still seeking out that first elusive major win. Had himself a great day today. Tiger Woods was grinding, was 3 over at one point, ends up even par. And to chat about it, we're joined now by Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel. What's happening, Todd?
Hey, I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're doing really well. So how would you describe the round for Tiger?
I think it was better than I expected, to be honest with you, given how he played over the weekend. Given the fact that Monday he spent a lot of the day in ice baths trying to reduce inflammation, his swing speed has gone down, and I mean, he just seemed mentally and physically just checked out over the weekend at Akron in the Bridgestone Invitational. And you know, he's 42. This is his 14th start of 2018. That's more starts than he's had since 2013 in 1 year. And I just think the grind is getting to him a bit. And he has found enough energy on this day to, you know, put a decent number up, and maybe now he can kind of ease into this tournament and start building some momentum on the weekend.
But in terms of expectations, I mean, because he's Tiger, everyone wants to believe he can go out there and win a major, and we just saw it a few weeks ago at the British Open on the 11th tee. It was a solo lead on a Sunday at a major. So there's no reason to believe it's an impossibility. But for you,
oh no,
are your expectations, have they lowered when it comes to Tiger? I mean, what are you expecting out of him?
Well, to be honest with you, I think all of our expectations have been greatly exaggerated for 2018. Sure, I mean, he is by far the greatest player of our generation. But not only is he coming back with what is a brand new body, a fused spine, but just like Jack Nicklaus said, just like Rory McIlroy said this week, he needs to relearn how to win. I know that sounds ridiculous for a guy who's won nearly 80 tournaments on the PGA Tour and 14 major championships, but if you look at the evidence that's been presented to us this year, in Tampa, he came to the 72nd hole, needing a great drive to give himself a good chance to attack the pin, to force himself into the playoffs. And he wasn't confident with the driver. He had an iron, and he had a 5-iron into the green. He had no shot at birdie. You look at what he did at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He was in the mix on the back nine. 16th hole is a par 5. Scoring average that day, probably 4.2. He jacks it out of bounds for the first time in his career, the many years that he's played at Bay Hill. And even you look at what he did at the Open Championship. There he was with the solo lead for the first time since 2011 in a major championship. And it got to him. He couldn't finish the deal. He played the remaining 6 or 7 holes over par. So although it may seem like a small gap from being a contender to a winner. For Tiger right now, it might be a giant chasm, and that's something that he is going to have to work through.
But I love the fact that today, as he seemed to be losing it on the front nine, he puts the driver away and he pulls irons out, and suddenly he's like the senior playing senior's golf rather than being being Tiger Woods. And he comes back and has a reasonably good round because of it. Could he?
I agree.
Is he not maturing?
Oh, well, I think I don't think that's anything new. If you look at Tiger's career, for those who know golf, he has been an excellent game manager, maybe one of the best right up there with Jack Nicklaus in his career. He understands his weakness, and if he can put himself in the proposition and eliminate the weakness with whatever club it is in his bag, then he'll do so. That's the way he's always played. And you're right, he did save that round today. You go bogey, double bogey in a major championship out of the gate, especially coming off the very below par weekend that he had, and I say that meaning he didn't play well, in Akron. I think he did build some momentum those final 16 holes, and you know, and hopefully he can continue to build and work himself into this championship.
With Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel, so Ricky Fowler goes out and shoots a 5-under. He sits atop the leaderboard. There's still some guys out in the field, but at this point he looks like he's a pretty good safe money to be the leader after 18 holes. And this is a guy, I believe he's been outright second or T2 in all of the majors, and he feels like he's a guy that's destined to finally get one. I don't know if this is necessarily the weekend, but do you believe it's just a matter of time before Fowler does actually win a major?
Yeah, I do. I think he's mature and in control of his game. It just hasn't happened. I think the biggest hurdle for Ricky to get past is how he plays on Sunday. And it will be interesting if indeed he rolls into Sunday here at St. Louis with the lead in this championship, because if you look at his record on the PGA Tour, 8 times he has held a 54-hole lead or at least a share of the 54-hole lead heading into the final day, and he's only converted one of those leads into a win. So that's a terrible percentage. And that's something that he is going to have to get past. He completely understands that. I personally feel that he would be more comfortable chasing the lead on the final day, one or two shots back. I think that he is an aggressive player by nature, and either consciously or subconsciously, if he has the lead, I think it's like, you know, in football, he plays prevent defense, and suddenly you're getting burned with passes and, you know, and people are catching you. And so I think that I'm interested to see how this all plays out. It's Thursday, but as far as him being comfortable handling the pressure of being what is considered the best player, or who is considered the best player without a major, I think he's totally fine with that. He hangs around Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy. They're all great friends in South Florida. And when you hang around winners, usually, especially with his talent, you're going to win. So we'll see what happens.
Should be a fun weekend. Enjoy it down there. Thank you, Todd.
You got it, guys.
There's Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel, and the Golf Insider is brought to you by Subaru. Summer nights are made for Subaru with lease rates from 0.5% at your local Ontario Subaru dealer. Subaru, confidence in motion. So we'll see.
The great sports writer Jim Murray used to say that the phone book is filled with people who have led in the first round of major tournaments. They're not often the guys who are leading in the fourth round.
No, it generally doesn't work out that way. But when you got that kind of talent, you're going to be in the mix. You know, Fowler's not a guy who's completely at a left field, like the 140th ranked, or it's like an amateur that somehow is in the running. It's like that guy doesn't have it for 72. Fowler is a guy that will be in the running. Whether or not he's going to win it, I mean, is up for debate. Like Todd said, it's still way too early. Like, that's why it was significant that Tiger battled back to even par, because he's not out of the tournament.
But he has to be there at the end. And he hasn't been there at the end very often, and in all the time coming back. And you keep waiting for it to happen. And this is still a major. This is not the Greater Milwaukee Open.
No, it's not. And that's where Tiger did all his damage. He had the lead on Sunday. He teed off on Sunday last. He had the lead, and no one could catch him because he wouldn't allow anybody to catch
him. And they would be kowtowing.
A lot of times they'd wilt. Yeah. But he'd also go out there on Sunday and shoot 65, and it's like, you got no shot. Even if you played great, you're not catching him. Tiger was never a guy that came from behind. Like, he never chased down leaders on the weekend, on Sundays. So I wouldn't expect him to be able to do it all of a sudden at 42, where he looks tired and he hasn't been practicing a lot. I think he needs to be in the final group leading on Sunday for him to legitimately have a shot at winning the tournament.
And we still have to have him there. That's what we've learned in the last few months. It's more fun, even when he's not winning.
Make an appearance.
It's more fun when he's in the mix.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the U.S. Open, he was awful. He didn't make the cut. He was terrible. But at least he was there. In the first couple of days, you could watch him and talk about him throughout the weekend. What went wrong? I mean, there's Tiger, then there's the field.
I wish television would act as though there are other golfers on occasion.
I don't have as much interest in other golfers. I really don't.
If they're Fowler,
if Tiger's playing,
if they're Fowler or Dustin Johnson,
yeah,
or that
sure.
ilk.
But those guys get on.
Oh, they get on.
A lot of time it's overemphasized how much time Tiger gets. If Dustin Johnson is going low, people are watching him. He's on the screen.
I don't care if Koepka's on my television screen.
Yet he's won two U.S. Opens.
I know. I still don't care.
Well, that's fine, but he's a great player.
I want to see Spieth. I want to see Dustin. Those are the guys I want to see.
Gord Ash will be in studio in the 5 p.m. hour. We'll get back into the John Gibbons scenario and what's going on with the Blue Jays. And they got smoked last night.
Did you watch the game last night?
I am having a difficult time watching this team.
They're having a difficult time playing.
They are such an awful team.
There were two plays last night that... Remember when Gibby got in fights with Ted Lilly and I can't forget the other one at the top, Shea Hildebrand,
because of what he wrote on the whiteboard.
Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, if Teoscar Hernandez came off the field last night after lazying on that foul fly ball that he somehow didn't catch, if I'm the manager, I might have punched him in the face. Like, I might have very much. And then about two innings later, Solarte does the exact same thing. This is one of the worst defensive teams, and now it's
so. How is that not on John Gibbons, though?
Well, how is it on him?
Because that's his job. Fundamentals are his job.
If you're Teoscar Hernandez and you can't catch, and you can't field, and you can't play, and
then get him off the field.
They haven't given you anyone who's better than him bat wise. They have Kendrys Morales as a DH. Basically, you have two DHs. You may have three. Although I don't think so.
But at some point, okay, I got to get into this because we got to get into this.
This is not managing.
John Gibbons has to take responsibility for something. Like, I've never seen a scenario where a team goes 76 wins and then like 72 and no one says a word about the manager. He's the greatest.
He's
like,
managing better now with
how?
The worst.
Because
this team is
you
awful.
Wrote in his piece, you wrote in your piece yesterday, he's managing harder than he ever has.
Harder.
How is he managing harder? Was he showing up an hour earlier?
No. Because the decisions he needs to make are not automatic. When Cito Gaston had those teams...
You just said they are.
They're
you
not.
You can't pull a guy. Solarte's got to play.
I'm
Hernandez
saying,
has got to play.
He started, so far, three times. He started relief pitchers. Is that his doing? No. It's the management has given him this trash team, so he has to play. He has to make all of these little moves that... are going to fall apart because, frankly, these guys stink.
That's indisputable. I'm not saying there should be puddles of blood on the hands of John Gibbons.
And I don't mean
nobody
punching anybody.
So.
I'm just saying, can you imagine having Solarte on your team? I'm not Solarte. Teoscar Hernandez, who, by the way, is a pretty good major league hitter.
Yeah, he's got pop. But he can't defend. And I know that.
He's a
and
horrible defensive player. So what do you do?
Well, I mean...
You play him at DH, where he should play, except they have $11 million in Kendrys Morales.
No question.
Who can't play the field.
95%
so did John make those contracts? No.
No, he didn't.
Did he trade for Solarte? No. Did he trade for Diaz, who can't play shortstop? No.
But at some
they
point...
They gave him this trash team,
okay, but
and he's got to try and make it work.
Yesterday, we were talking about Giles, and how you said, yeah, okay, we got to get into this in the 5 p.m. hour. But you said, you know, Gibbons, what are you going to do? They brought in Giles. You got to put him out there. When Giles comes in a save situation, he's flawless. When he comes in and it's not a save situation, he's awful. What did Gibbons do? He brought him in. It wasn't a save situation. Why doesn't he take some heat for that? I'm not saying you run him out of town, but why can't we point out, Gibbons, maybe you should know that the stats don't work out that well in that situation.
Well, you got to ask yourself, what kind of pitcher in a tie game and extra innings is worse than in a save situation against the best team in baseball?
If he just gets a free pass for everything,
he's not going to get a free pass for everything. Nobody ever does. But I honestly think I thought this year with this trash roster, he's worked harder at he's putting different lineups out there. He's moved guys around. They're just a bad ball team.
They're a terrible team. There's no disputing that. They are a terrible team. And I'm not anti-John Gibbons. I'm not. But I just think it's gotten to a point now where he's been canonized to the point where he's completely off the charts, unbelievable, don't touch him, he can never do anything wrong. When did that ever become the case in pro sports?
It isn't. The reason that this is happening is because he's one of the great people you'll ever meet in your life. And he's getting every break because of it, and you like him because of it, and you feel bad for him because he's got to put Teoscar Hernandez out in the field every night.
The team is atrocious.
Yeah, and he's got to put Diaz at shortstop.
Right. Because and when Russell Martin. He's got to play Russell Martin. Like, you talk about a guy who was just gotten no attention. Go take a look at his slash line.
He's over 200, by the way.
Just barely.
Just got over 200.
He's got an OPS of like 680. He's getting paid $20 million a year, but because he's good guy Canadian Russell Martin on an awful team, we're focusing on different things. Anyway, Gord Ash in studio at 5 p.m.
Greatest moments in history are now up to you. This is TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
Yeah! All right, time for a Final Four Sound Wars battle between two number one seeds. This is like Duke taking on Carolina in March. Representing the Kessel Conference, it is seed number one.
It's a pleasure to be with you guys here on the field from up close, just watching Coach Vance Joseph from here. You watch him now on the screen. This diversity in his background is helping him a lot tonight. Quarterback at Colorado, defensive back in the NFL, and here he is having the time of his life.
That's never going to get old. And we interviewed Sergio Dipp at one point. Great guy. Great guy, great interview, somewhat self-deprecating. He's okay. He'll be fine. I wonder if it'll be a part of ESPN, like the opener, when they do the double games on Monday night, because that's what he was doing last year in Denver. So that's the number one seed in the Kessel Conference, going up against the number one seed in the Yes Guy, No Guy Conference.
Friday pre-tapes, you're into this kind of stuff.
I'm so excited. I wish I was in my car, like driving around.
All right, so this is a Vegas legend. I caught up with him earlier this afternoon. Mac Jameson. Mac, what's happening?
Is this Brian?
This is Brian.
Did that just cut out?
This is a joke, isn't it? I'm calling you out.
I don't know who you're talking about, man.
You were my boy. We were peas and carrots 2 minutes ago, and you just wall squat great white sharded right in my yip. Mac Jameson? I want to hear the beginning again, because I guarantee if I hear the guy's voice, I'll tell you who it is.
All right.
Is this Brian?
This is Brian.
Noodles! I quit the show!
All right, so go to tsn1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite, having the time of his life, our boy Sergio Dipp, going up against Vegas legend Mac Jameson. Did you ever meet Mac Jameson? You covered a lot of fights in Vegas. Over your years.
I did not meet Mac Jameson.
He's a legend down there.
I hear that.
Yes. Voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Listen to Landsberg in the morning for the winner and for the start of a Sound Wars 2018 championship battle right here on TSN 1050.